Coming up on New York Now, the legislature examines how the state can improve access to broadband for those who live in the more rural parts of the state.
The new New York broadband program made some commitments. We made a significant investment, and everybody was supposed to have coverage by now, but the simple fact is they do not.
And Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio and John Campbell of the USA Today Network join us at the Reporters Roundtable. It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program, this is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. An impeachment bombshell in Washington could send shrapnel through congressional districts across New York.
We'll get into that at the Reporters Roundtable with John Campbell and Karen DeWitt. First up, though, a look at headlines.
A week after banning flavored e-cigarettes in New York, Governor Cuomo traveled across the state line to Connecticut, where he met with their governor, Ned Lamont, a fellow Democrat. They announced a joint state partnership to develop a uniform approach to e-cigarettes and a legal cannabis program.
What came up, and we've discussed in some detail, is how we work together state by state, and perhaps with our neighboring states in Rhode Island and New Jersey and beyond, marijuana regulation and now vaping. The idea that each state does its own thing, it's a little patchwork of different rules and regulations, different qualities in terms of public safety and public health. Governor Cuomo really has been forceful in saying this is something we want to do together. We want to do it on a timely basis. We don't want to give up marijuana to the black market. We've seen how dangerous that can be. And come up with our public safety regulations and other rules. If we do that together going forward, I think that would be a priority for both of us.
I'm very excited about the relationship with not just the state, but with Governor Lamont. He's here to make things better. And he's willing to take the risk and take the chance to make change, which many elected officials are not willing to do.
The governors and representatives from their respective health and policy departments, along with law enforcement, will convene next month at a summit. In other news, groundbreaking took place on Long Island this week on the new Belmont Park Arena. It is the centerpiece of the $1.3 billion redevelopment plan for the area. The 19,000-seat arena will be the future home of the NHL's New York Islanders franchise, who used to play at the old Nassau Veterans Memorial Coliseum in Uniondale before moving to the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. The team transitioned there in 2015, saying the Coliseum had become antiquated.
It will revitalize the entire economy, I think, of the region, certainly of the locality. 350,000 square feet of development, a hotel, retail, 10,000 construction jobs. It's going to maximize the potential of this site, and that's long overdue. And it is going to bring the Islanders back home where they belong.
The new arena is projected to open for the Islanders in time for the 2021-22 NHL season. And finally, more economic development news, this time upstate in the Mohawk Valley. At the Marcy Nano Center, the state announced a $1 billion public-private partnership with Cree, a leader in silicon carbon technology. The company will construct and equip a new state-of-the-art 200-millimeter wafer fabrication facility, as well as invest $30 million for research and development. CEO Greg Lowe spoke about what the company can bring to an area that has seen its share of economic hardship over the last few decades.
The technologies and the industries that our technology goes into are high growth industries. Electric vehicles, as an example that I talked about, Volkswagen has announced that over the next decade, they're gonna introduce 70 new electric vehicles to the market. They've also announced that in 2024, they will bring to market their very last new car that has an internal combustion engine as the primary driver. 2025 and beyond, everything will either be an electric vehicle or a hybrid of some sort. That's going to make the world a better place. It's going to give tremendous opportunity for us at Cree, and I think it's going to be a tremendous opportunity here in the Mohawk Valley.
Lowe said the company plans on creating around 600 full-time, highly skilled technician and engineering positions. The state is pitching in $500 million.
All right, we've presented some of the big news of the week. Now it's time for some analysis. And for that, we join my partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler.
All right, and now for some packed analysis of the week's news. I'm happy to be joined by my friends John Campbell of the USA Today Network and Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio. All right, big news in Washington, of course, the initiation of a formal impeachment inquiry related to lots of things, but the straw that really broke this particular camel's back was the president's outreach to Ukraine. But let's talk about what that means in New York, and let's start with what it will mean for some marginal Democrats and marginal Republicans, many of whom, at least on the Democratic side, were kind of agnostic on the question mm-hmm. of impeachment, but all of a sudden you had many of them, or enough of them, kind of tipping over to the other side, including Antonio Delgado from probably one of the most purple districts in the nation.
Yeah, I would just say it's a political risk for him, but it's a political risk for everyone here. The Democrats in Congress, President Trump, there's no way of really calculating how this is going to go. And I think it's something we want our elected officials to do. I mean, the ones that are pursuing this impeachment really believe something wrong happened, and you would like to see them put, you know, this over politics. So I think that part of it is a good thing. But really, it's hard to predict. I mean, Delgado won in what's traditionally been a very conservative district. He won over John Faso, who was popular in the district, but it was a bad year, 2018, for Republicans. Will this be ammunition for Faso or somebody to get the seat back? So he's taking a big risk.
You also saw Joe Morelli out in Rochester. He's a Democrat who came out in favor of impeachment right before the inquiry was announced. As well as, one you didn't see was Anthony Brindisi, who is in another one of those kind of purpley districts that stretches from...
Freshman.
Yeah, he's a freshman. It stretches into the Binghamton area up through almost to Albany. He has not come out in favor of impeachment, nor has Max Rose, who is a Staten Island Democrat, and Staten Island has very conservative parts, is known as, the most conservative borough. So you have seen most Democrats in New York come out in favor of it, but those two are the outliers.
Yeah, Brindisi says he needs more clarity. I think Max Rose said something like, all options are on the table, so that they're going to get yeah. trashed from both sides on that, yeah. too. I think that there's a lot of pressure on them. But right now, they're thinking they can walk that fine line. I don't know how long they can, frankly.
We should say we're talking Friday morning. Who knows where this story is
That's
going?
Right.
The way
so
it's accelerating, who knows where the facts will lead us by the time people see this over the weekend.
And I would just bring up one other person, Elise yeah. Stefanik, the Republican North Country Congresswoman. I mean, she's obviously not for impeachment, but is that going to come back to haunt her next year, just depending how this goes? I mean, nobody knows. It's kind of exciting as reporters to see that they're not doing all these political calculations on this, and it's just, it's out.
Well, I mean, with something this big, like you said, how long can you walk that line? You have to take a side, one mm-hmm. or the other. And that is difficult for those people that are in those purple districts.
Perfect segue, John, because someone who apparently is trying to walk that line or appear on both sides of it is Governor Andrew Cuomo, who on Wednesday in a radio interview said, "You're darn right it's appropriate for Democrats to move toward an impeachment inquiry," but then appearing with Chris Christie on Thursday evening, he said that Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, was driven to it by leftists within her caucus, and he said that the inquiry will take the nation down a very long and unproductive road, which seemed like he was a little bit more resistant to the idea.
Yeah, I don't know if he can let both of those statements stand because they're pretty contradictory. He's going to be asked probably at his next opportunity, maybe another public radio interview to clarify what does
Thread
he mean?
Needle.
Can you really be for it and predict it's going to have a horrible outcome at the same time?
Well, there was no nuance in his first statement on it. His first statement was, as you said, that was a direct quote, "You're darn right, the evidence supports an inquiry."
And to a public radio audience,
and
of course,
to a public
on
radio audience. Then the next night, it's a more conservative audience of Chris Christie loyalists in the crowd. To be fair, we haven't seen the entire clip of that. There was no live stream of it. This was in Newark, New Jersey.
Yeah, we should point that out. Usually the governor, when he does a public appearance, they'll do a live stream for reporters to see, and there wasn't one of this one.
Yeah, this is, we're basing this on reporting from Politico, but the quotes were fairly extensive.
But see, I'm wondering why there wasn't a live stream, too. That's a little telling, because usually he wants us to know what he's saying.
Yeah, well, my point with that is that, maybe there is some nuance in there that we missed by not seeing it, but the reports, the quotes are very telling and very different from what he had the day before.
Nuance to come, but one thing that is also coming, according to the governor, is the legalization of adult use recreational marijuana. And what he said this week is he's reaching out for to other governors in Connecticut and New Jersey, at least, for a regional solution on this and on the question of vaping. But that recreational adult use marijuana will come in the budget this time around, that he understands that the state went down the wrong road when it didn't get done in the budget last year, where the governor's powers are, of course, paramount.
I guess we can call it legal cannabis 2.0, because he's trying again, and he tried to put it in the budget last year. It fell apart. A standalone bill, it didn't have enough votes in the Democratic State Senate to pass, and so he's going to try to put it in the budget. He's facing increasing pressure to legalize marijuana. I mean, when you have all this patchwork of laws, particularly in the Northeast, it's getting out of hand.
And, the argument in favor of a regional approach is these states border each other. You can bring, people will bring marijuana from one state to another. If you have a patchwork of laws, that's going to be difficult to enforce. But the reality of trying to get some sort of regional law that everybody adopts done is you have three governors, you have two houses of the legislature in each state. I mean, that is a lot of people that you have to bring together and come to an agreement on one sort of package here, and that's a very difficult
thing. The governor has never tried this before, as far as I can tell, this kind of regional approach, certainly not on gun control or anything like that. That does have a big, there are federal issues as well.
Well, I think, as John reported on, there's so many New Yorkers going across the border to Massachusetts to buy marijuana there that maybe he's more aware that it is a big issue.
When he seems to have two new allies in the Connecticut and New Jersey governors now, the previous governor, Dan Malloy, there was friction there between Cuomo and Malloy. Now you have Ned Lamont, and he seems to be very friendly with. They went fishing in Wilson, and they met at the governor's residence in Hartford yesterday. And you've got Phil Murphy down in New Jersey, which is a Democratic governor for the first time in Cuomo's term. That being said, he did get along very well with Chris Christie, who was a Republican,
well,
as we just
true.
Discussed.
We've got just a little bit of time left, but we do want to note that one thing that came out, sort of camouflaged by a lot of the impeachment inquiry news, is the fact that the governor and Sandra Lee have decided to just be friends. This is not a surprise.
No, it is something that a lot of us, I think, expected, because in part the governor has been spending a lot more time in Albany at the governor's mansion. The New York Post reported in May that they were living apart, essentially, but they finally did confirm it and say yes, they've decided to end their romantic relationship, but they're staying, I believe what they said was the best of friends or something like that.
Keep a deep friendship and keep involved in each other's families.
All right. Well, that's where we're going to have to leave it on that sad note. So thanks very much to John Campbell from the USA Today Network. Check out his Twitter post putting together the Scooby-Doo theme with quotes from the governor and Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio. Thanks a lot. And now we'll kick it to Matt at the desk.
All right, thanks, Casey. Last week, a hearing in Albany looked at how to better meet rural broadband needs. And joining us now to discuss the matter is Capital Region Assemblyman Angelo Santabarbara. He is a Democrat who represents parts of Albany, Schenectady, and Montgomery County. Assemblyman, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Availability of high-speed internet. The coverage area and cell phone as well has definitely improved in the last decade or so, but listening to and watching that hearing, there's a long way to go before we get universal coverage. To start off, what were some of the things that kind of stuck out to you during that hearing?
Well, as you said, it is a topic that's been discussed in recent times more than ever.
By Governor Cuomo as well.
Yeah, and part of it is that, look, the new New York broadband program made some commitments. We made a significant investment, and everybody was supposed to have coverage by now, but the simple fact is they do not. And some of the constituents that you heard at that hearing, some of them are my constituents, one from Duanesburg in particular that I remember, that just doesn't have coverage. And they essentially have been skipped over, have been left out even through round three of the funding, which is the final round.
Let's talk about that, because Duanesburg is a, I guess you can call it a suburb of Albany. It's about 30 minutes west in Schenectady County. You were talking about how maps were a big part of this. Kind of explain how that works.
Well, there was a lot going on and, you know, a lot of factors that go into this. One of them was the maps. I took a look at the maps and, you know, the maps, you know, the FCC has ordered new maps at this point, but they, you know, the maps they have now say that New York is 100% covered. So how is that possible when we have constituents that come to a hearing and say, I haven't had service now, I don't see service coming in the future. You know, I've gone out to some of these homes and they don't have service. So part of it is that the maps are inaccurate because they do it by census block. And the New York Broadband Program Office, they say we're 99.9% covered. What does that mean? That doesn't necessarily mean everybody is covered. So when you go by census block, even if you have one location in a census block, they consider that area covered. If you have broadband or the potential, even the potential for broadband, maybe somebody hasn't hooked up, but they consider that covered. That's a really problematic for rural areas. They have the larger census block. So we're seeing that these maps are inaccurate. I know the FCC just ordered new maps to be created. I don't know when we're gonna get these new maps, but they're gonna be based on shape files. A little more accurate, a little more localized, which is really what we need to get a good assessment on who has coverage and who doesn't. But in my district, I know, because people come and talk to me about it. That's one of the issues that was discussed. The other issue is, look, you know, the merger, Charter Communications, Time Warner Cable, you know, their merger was revoked because of their failure to do what they said they were going to do. So the state invested a significant investment for them to cover all areas of New York, provide service, but yet we're finding someone like Annabelle Felton in my constituent in Duanesburg that was simply skipped over because the cost to go out to that home that's in a rural area, you know, how many others are like that? So the cost was more than they wanted to include. So they simply skipped over that. I know there was a settlement, but at the hearing, if you heard me, there was a settlement agreement. They paid money into a fund that's going to be used to cover some of these areas. But who's following up on this?
Right.
Who's going to make sure they're still doing what they're supposed to be doing?
Right. So state regulators and Charter Spectrum came to an agreement earlier this summer over high-speed internet expansion. Part of the agreement is Charter doubling the upstate investment, reaching out to an additional 145,000 homes and businesses. You know, that expansion is supposed to finish in 2 years, pretty much 2 years on this date. How is the state legislature going to keep track and make sure that they're following up on this?
Well, that's And I chair the Commission on Rural Resources in the State Assembly. It's a joint commission with the Senate. The work of this commission, as chair, I made it very clear, is going to focus on making sure these rural communities are not left out. That means we have to make we need accountability. We need to make sure that Charter, Spectrum, whoever's out there is doing what they say they're going to be doing. One of the things that came up towards the end of the hearing is that, you know, they have a certain amount of credit for areas that they get they provide coverage for. Some of these coverage areas are overlapping. So they essentially have taken credit for areas that already had coverage anyways, and now it's overlapping into that area and they get credit for that, so someone else is left out somewhere else. Things like that that are slipping through the cracks means constituents, people in rural areas are not getting the service that they were promised through the new New York Broadband Program.
What are you hearing from Charter Spectrum? Is it realistic? Will they be able to meet this two-year deadline?
Well, I had a little difficulty getting that answer at the hearing. So this is something that I'm going to be investigating. The Public Service Commission certainly has heard from me. The governor's office has heard from me on this issue. I've written a number of letters. I've written letters on specific locations that were left out and what action was going to be taken. But it comes down to, you know, part of the way they do this is sort of a reverse auction. So my question at the hearing was, how are we prioritizing and expediting the service in these rural areas that are left out? Part of it, the problem is that they have a reverse auction, which means the proposals that come in, the ones that have the least state investment and overall cost are the ones that get prioritized. That's problematic. That's problematic when you have someone in a rural area, you have a school, you have a community where clearly it's going to cost more to get service out to those areas.
Right.
So these areas are simply being left out of the equation. that's something that needs to change. So that's another area that I've identified that we're going to be looking into as the chair of the Rural Resources Committee.
I heard one gentleman at the hearing who essentially compared the expansion of broadband access to the Rural Electrification Act of the 1930s. You know, if you want to spur economic development in some of the rural areas, like, you know, maybe a route or some other places in Montgomery County, this is the way to do it.
Yeah, and I represent all of Montgomery County and some of the areas out there. It's pretty rural.
Yeah.
You know, all the way down as far as Canajoharie, when you look at those areas, St. Johnsville, you know, even farming was brought up, how a lot of the technology, the tools that are used now, the modern farming tools, are connected to the cloud and they download information back and forth. But if you don't have that connection, you really can't do it. But let's just overall quality of life, you know, being able to access the internet, to have reasonable speeds, you know, 25 megabits per second, I think is the minimum. And a lot of areas don't even have that. You know, you're talking about quality of life, certainly education. Mm-hmm. You know, the founder of Fultonville School District was there. A superintendent was there to testify, to talk about what a challenge it has been just to keep up in education when you don't have access when you leave the school.
All right, before we go, I want to hit on a few other issues. One that's kind of local to you but really has statewide implications, and that is the troubled St. Clair's Hospital Pension Fund. St. Clair's was a hospital in Schenectady County. They closed about a decade ago, merged with another nearby hospital. The fund has slashed or eliminated pension benefits for around 1,100 people who are relying on that money. Where are we on that issue right now? And how do we stop this legislatively from happening again?
Well, there's been a lot of developments since this came to light. I've talked to a lot of the constituents that are affected by this. Their lives have been turned upside down. The first thing I want to make clear is this is not being given to them. This is something they've earned.
Sure.
And it was taken away, and nobody seems to know why. The state invested $28+ million into the fund.
Yeah.
The whereabouts of that money, what happened to it, nobody can really give an answer. The St. Clair's Corporation tried to dissolve earlier this year. I did introduce legislation to stop that. Since that time, our attorney general stepped in to do an investigation. That company was not allowed to dissolve, which is a good thing. And their voices need to be heard in court, because a number of things that the AG's office already found is that, you know, I think at one point it seemed that the insurance would have helped. If they had insurance on this fund, we might not be talking about this right now. And it seems that the documents that were provided to the AG's office shows that the board did want insurance. Why didn't they buy it? That's still a question that's unanswered. You know, a lot of red flags, a lot of things that need to be investigated as to what happened. Was there steps that could have been taken to prevent this? And do we need to hold people accountable?
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about people's lives here.
Sure.
So somebody needs to be responsible. But on a separate track, we as legislators, we need to find a solution now. We can't wait for this investigation until the end of this investigation, which could take a long time to actually find out what happened. But people's lives, people are selling their homes. People are not able to make ends meet because the retirement funds that they were promised are just not there anymore.
All right, that's an ongoing investigation.
It's ongoing,
right now,
and we
could Tish James, the Attorney General.
Yes, yeah, so we continue to look for funding solutions, you know, community partners to try and come together to at least restore some of this pension fund in the short term, so that people can restore some of their lives, some of their life back. But it's ongoing. It'll be a long term, investigation. But we do need to find answers, because we certainly don't want this to happen again. It may lead to legislation, further legislation, once we get the full report from the AG's office.
And finally, we'll end on some good news here. You were in Washington, D.C. earlier this week. A city that you represent got an award.
Yes, the great city of Amsterdam, the Mohawk Valley Gateway Overlook Bridge, was named one of 13 great places in America. It's an honor and a distinction, a great distinction for the city of Amsterdam, that is a city on the rise. We've seen a lot of investments there. The $10 million downtown revitalization initiative was the latest round of funding. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is because this project is so significant to the area. The bridge itself is a greenway in the sky. It has history. It recalls Amsterdam's history, but it also brings us into the future. Amsterdam's one of those cities that's divided by the Mohawk River. Mm-hmm. So you have the south side and you have the downtown area and the rest of the city. These communities were divided by the water. This bridge reunited the entire city. It's something that has brought community events, has brought celebration. It has brought a lot of pride to the city of Amsterdam.
All right, always nice to end on a good note. Our Assemblyman Angelo Santa Barbara, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, great to be here.
Time now for our New York Now poll question. Do you support impeachment proceedings against President Donald Trump? Let us know at nynow.org. Last week, we posed this question. Would you like to see an end to fusion voting, which allows candidates to run on multiple ballot lines? And the majority said no. Jason in Livingston was in the majority, explaining, I left a major party to join a minor one because I wanted to send a message with my vote. Amy on Long Island voted yes. Fusion voting corrupts our elections and deprives voters of real choices. And finally, Anita in the capital city told us, a politically appointed commission should not be considering elimination of fusion voting, a longstanding right of political expression for New York voters. We want to thank all those who took the time to vote. To do so, head to nynow.org. It's where you can find all of our past programs from the last decade. It's also where you can find links to us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where our handle is at nynow_PBS.
All right, that's all the time we have this week. We leave you with footage from the vineyards around Seneca Lake. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union.
And I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks so much for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.
Hi, everyone. I'm Matt Ryan. If you like what you hear, rate and review us right on your mobile device. When you do so, it makes it a little easier for people trying to find us. And thanks so much for listening to the New York Now podcast.